right here, right now, every day. CIUT 89.5, Toronto. Sound of your city. Right here, right now, every day. CIUT 89.5, Toronto. Sound of your city.
Want to learn French? Parlez-vous français? Join us every Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on CIUT 89.5 FM or live from our studio. Popori Show targets student listeners who want to explore and travel through the Francophone world. Our show includes French lessons, news, reports from across the continent every Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on CIUT 89.5 FM. Our email address, pot.pourri@sympatico.ca.
Hi, welcome to Evidence. This is Saturday, May 23rd. I'm Ted Fox. Coming up on the show, Louise LaCavalier, a choreographer and dancer, will talk about her presentation of Blue, taking place May 20th to Thursday at the Bluma Apple Theater. Also, Nova Bhattacharya, about her role as an actor and choreographer in the Bollywood-inspired adaptation of Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing. But first off, we have choreographer Jessica Runge on her presentation of Possible Dances, taking place May 28th to June the 7th at Intergalactic Arts Collective Artscape Young Place. Welcome, Jessica.
Hello, Ted.
Are you online here?
Yes.
No. I'm sorry, there seems to be a technical difficulty. I'll start this in just one moment.
The headphones are working.
Hello?
No. this should have been tested before. Oh, God, now nothing's working.
Hello?
Oh, I give up. This happens every week, there's a problem. I start the show and realize I can't hear Jessica. Her voice is in there.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, Jesus.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, can you hear?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Yes, you can hear you. We can't hear her.
It's just a little bit. We can hear her out there. So it's just talking to the mic and it's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. So let's go on air and just do this. Hi, welcome back to Evidence on CIUT FM. Welcome to beautiful spring day. And I'm Małgorzata Nowacka here with Ted Fox.
Yeah, she just got here. And Jessica, we can't hear you.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you from out there in the studio. So, welcome anyway. So, Possible Dances, is that what it is? Possible? I like the names that were going to come and... Hey, it's not going to be dance at all. It's going to be performance art or some other little thing.
Will you change your mind and do something completely different?
No. well, the word possible dances, well, there are lots of meanings, but one way to look at it is as just simply what it's possible for me to do. So, you know, it's hard to get time and enough money and enough resources together to do your work, and so I have this idea that I'm going to invite people into my studio, and I've gathered together four beautiful dances, and I've got some really lovely lighting happening, and I'm going to share the work that I'm doing with my audiences, and it's not a big theater. It's what's possible for me to do, and it's also what's possible for me to do. It's work that really speaks to me at this time in my life. And you know, when you have a family, as I do, and so many other demands on your time, and perhaps always as an artist, it's important to do the things that speak most to you. And so there's also that idea in there, mixed in there too. What's possible for me to do now is what is really most important for me, most important for me to share with audiences.
And can you define a little bit more what that is?
What that is, right? Well, this is a really exciting project that I've been working on for years, actually. And it started as a response to the death of my stepmother. I have had a lot of parents in my life, but my stepmother was the first parent that I lost, and I had a lot of feelings about that I just needed to put to give expression to. So this project started as a dance where I was putting into movement my thoughts and feelings and memories, because I think in that way I'm really a dancer. Dance is really how I process and how I think about information, and so that's what I really wanted to do with all of those different kinds of feelings, happy memories, sad feelings, feelings of loss, feelings of, so many feelings, the kinds of things that you go through when you've lost someone. And it happened that at that time, I was also pregnant. So I made a dance, and the dance I made, many people were really interested in the connection between my place as the daughter of someone that I'd lost and as someone who was about to become a mother again. So that imagery resonated very strongly with people, and it became really interested in how people understand movement and how the context, how what our body looks like, and what we wear and the kind of music that we play and where we place our dance, all of these things, even how we look at the audience, and of course how we execute the movements, all of these things frame for our audience the content of our dance. And so from this original solo, I embarked on a kind of research project with four other choreographers. I invited them all to come in and look at my dance and think about what was the essential meaning of the work and how they would frame it for an audience. And so what we have here in my presentation this week is a collection of the four sort of remixes of my original solo. And each choreographer has gone in a completely different direction, sharing with the audience, framing for the audience an aspect of the content of my original dance and framing it in their own. Well, it's a collaboration. It's certainly been a collaboration with each of these fantastic artists.
And who is collaborating with you on it?
Yes, an excellent question. The fantastic artists are, well, Susanna Hood, who's now based in Montreal, Deborah Dunn, also based in Montreal, Susie Burpee, who's a local, and Heidi Strauss, also a Toronto-based choreographer. And I have, in one of these dances, I have also a dancing partner. Brendan Wyatt is going to be dancing with me in Heidi Strauss's work.
So what was the biggest surprise that you received during this process? So if you had to select, I'm sure you were surprised by all of these interpretations of your original work.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to select the one that was the most surprising, you would have never expected, what would that be, and what's the aspect of it that made you feel that way?
Okay, well, the first thing that springs to mind is Susie's way of working was actually not to watch the original dance. What she did was ask me to describe as precisely and neutrally as possible what I was doing. For example, I'm reaching with my right hand, I'm bending my elbow, I'm sliding my left foot along the floor, just, no layering of emotion or imagery or anything, just the logistics. And then she made a second pass through where she asked me to explain what am I thinking? Why am I doing this? I'm reaching for the stars. I'm remembering her cheekbone. Some of the things that where the movements might have come from, or what might be wandering through your mind and consciousness while you're performing. And so she took those two explanations of the dance and created the movement that I do in her dance. Completely from that, without only watched the dance at the, like, you know, a few weeks ago kind of thing. So that was pretty surprising.
Wow.
To me. Yeah.
And in terms of Brendan and his function in this, how did mm-hmm. he get woven into this, and why is he there? He's not a female woman that you're remembering.
Mm-hmm.
What's he doing?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think Heidi was really, there's kind of two ways that I look at it. One idea is the idea that in my dance, I was so much focused on the absence of someone that I think Heidi thought it would be interesting to have someone present in the space. And now she didn't choose another woman, so it doesn't become about me and Karen. But by having someone else present, I think it can also, it focuses us on this question of how do we understand each other. So in this case, instead of the work asking the audience, what are you understanding from Jessica and how she's moving and what she's wearing and how we frame this, instead of the question, or as well as the question being posed to the audience, it's being illustrated. There's two people there, and they're communicating with each other, and this me and Brandon, and are we understanding each other, and when are we understanding each other, and how are we understanding each other, and how are we seeing things the same way and differently, and drawing on our own memories, and how much of our memory is in common, and how much of it is separate, and so all these kinds of questions come into the dance in a different way.
Right. Well, it all sounds really fascinating, and thank you so much for being with us here today. We are
thank
on
you.
CIUT 89.5 FM on Evidence. I'm Małgorzata Nowacka here of TED Fox, speaking of Jessica Runge, who is talking about her presentation of possible dances taking place May 28th to June 7th at the Intergalactic Arts Collective. And is there a website people can go to find out more, or is it just a dance current listing?
I have a website. So it's just my name. It's www.jessicarunge.com. So JessicaRunge.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And we'll be right back talking to Nova Bhattacharya and Louise LeCavalier. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Your support helps keep community radio on the air. If you love CIUT 89.5 FM radio and you want a chance to win one of our amazing grand prize draws, don't wait. Go to www.ciut.fm and donate today. CIUT 89.5 FM, the new sound of your city.
The Yorkville Village Alumni Association invites you to be part of the first annual Spirit of Yorkville Festival. Friday, May 22nd and Saturday, May 23rd at the Pilot on Cumberland Street in the heart of Yorkville. The Spirit of Yorkville Festival, bringing you the best of the original artists from the halcyon days of the village. Two evenings and an afternoon folk fest, all at the Pilot. Come and party with your favorite artists. Luke and the Apostles, Juno Award winner Kathy Young, George Oliver, John Finley, Johnny Loveson, Greg Godovitz, Ken Whiteley, and many, many more. Hosted by David Marsden, curator at nythespirit.com. Brian Master, The Jewel 88.5 FM. And Ken Stauer, CIUT 89.5 FM. Tickets are limited, so get yours today. For more information, visit spiritofyorkville.com. That's spiritofyorkville.com. Be there or be square.
We'll be right back.
welcome back to Evidence. I'm Małgorzata Nowacka.
And I'm Ted Fox.
And we are very excited to welcome Louise LeCavalier to the show. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome. So you have a show, So Blue, which is coming to the Luminata Festival, May 29th and 30th.
Yes.
Which is called So Blue. And can you just talk about the impetus that drives you within this work and what it is about to you?
Officially, it was the first work I made for myself, and it started as a solo. So I really wanted to start it as a solo because it was kind of a different pressure on me to make something on myself without a choreographer. But I just tried to leave everything open when I started, so that just improvise movement, and some ideas I had about 1,000 pieces I could make, but I thought, maybe it's better to start with just the movement, because I like the movement and I believe much can be said with that. So I improvise a lot in the studio, and at some point after months and months of work, I decide to listen to lots of music, and some music really hooked to very much more with time, the music of Mertin Dédé. And then I decided, yes, I'm going to do something on those music, and the piece happened from... I decided on a certain day I start to create the movement, and I stopped now, instead of improvising every day and making new stuff all the time. And like every other piece I did with other choreographers, strangely, you work for months when you have this time possible to work, and something happens, a piece happens, and it's not totally your decision what it becomes. It's born from all the ideas I have about dance and all the things I see, I perceive, and my opinion, well, not ideas about dance and everything. Everything is there. I wanted to leave that first piece very open, and it gives a piece that has a bit of this flavor, I think.
So I just jumped right into the piece because I just assumed that the whole world knows who you are, being our superstar of dance in Canada. But if you could summarize yourself in a quick 3 sentences, can you go to a brief biography?
Resume of my dance life.
Maybe you should mention Locke, because he was such a seminal influence on
you. I don't live every day thinking about things like this. If not, I think I couldn't dance anymore. I have to feel about myself like a beginner when I start every day, when I go back in the studio, when I improvise to make a new piece. I feel really like a beginner, and in a way, it's a very good feeling to feel you don't know so much, and there's still so many things to discover about yourself, not things about the big world, because there's lots is said about it, and maybe we figure it all, but maybe we're all wrong, but about ourselves is maybe the same. We think we figure out ourselves with time, and I think I don't really do, because I personally mix up what I dream of being and what I am really, and sometimes I don't know what the line in between. And so I go in the studio dreaming and being in the reality at the same time, and shifting from one to the other and playing with this line of what's real and what's not real, what can I be and what I am not, what I am, and so I'm sure of nothing.
When you're doing all this, is it within the confines, say, of an older dancer's body too that you're thinking?
My memory
Ted, it's a more experienced dancer, not an older dancer. Okay, just so we're clear.
maybe this experience that's there, that's inevitable, I guess, and that's good, but. My memory is not so perfect about how I was when I was 20, how I was when I was 30, 40. So it's a bit unclear. It depends which situation I remember. I can remember situations where I felt totally great, and I can remember also other situations where I didn't feel so good at any kind of age. So it's not aging in a bad way. What I feel is to do is just difference. I don't even feel different because I forget about yesterday. I try to be just present with what I am now, what I am today. Tomorrow is different because tomorrow maybe I'm less tired or more tired, more happy, more sad. It's dealing with dreams and reality more than my history in the studio. So my age maybe has some importance more for the others and for myself, because I don't spend my time thinking of what are the great things I could do at 20 that I cannot do now. It's not that I want to erase anything, but it's just not so important in my day-to-day work.
And in terms of what you need to do for your body now to keep it at a place that you like, do you still use elements of boxing in your training?
Not so much. When I teach, I do a little bit of boxing for the students because, as just like me, when I discovered it, they all like it, or most of them really like it a lot, because movers are fan of movement, and we try all kinds of dance techniques in our lives, and yoga, most dancers, and sometimes kung fu or tai chi, but boxing was not really so popular amongst dancers, and each time I bring a little bit of dance boxing technique, it's interesting. There's a challenge, and there's precision also, and people like it, so I do like it also as a training, but I don't do it so much anymore, I think, because I did lots for many years, and then I switched to yoga, which I'm doing a lot more now, and athletic training also. But yeah, it includes boxing also. I do a little bit of boxing with a trainer once a week.
Wow.
But I keep in good shape because I dance, because I'm very active in my life. I'm not so specifically trained now. Like, I don't do every day a ballet class. I don't do this anymore. I've done it many, many years, and I don't need it for the kind of dance I do now. But I like to feel that I'm in good shape because I'm going on stage as a dancer, and I have to be able to stay there on stage for 1 hour and not being out of breath after a few movements, you know.
Mm-hmm. And back to the piece, can you talk about the relationship between the man and the work? Because he happens later in this piece. So where did he come from and what is he doing there?
Whom do you talk about?
Well, I saw So Blue, and I remember there's a male dancer.
Oh yeah, Frédéric. Okay, sorry, I misheard the beginning of the question. Oh,
okay.
So you're asking me about Frédéric?
What is his role and his function, and why does he happen there so suddenly? And
it's not for function, I think. I started to make a piece as a solo because I wanted just to develop what was the vocabulary of the piece, and it's for sure I wanted to dance with someone. I wanted a duet. I like duets very much, or trios or solos. Duets, trios I like better than group pieces. Sometimes group pieces I can appreciate, but I like the relation with another person. Well, I also like relations with women, but dance-wise it's more maybe complex to come with great duets for two women together. I don't know why. Maybe some people achieve it very well. But it's not so easy. It was I saw with La 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 when Edward was making pieces, never big duets or very convincing things came out of duets of two women. They were interesting, and I like to dance them. But if it has to be a whole show with two women, there's got to. I don't know how to find a way to it. But with men, I dance a lot with different guys with La La La, and because of the difference of strength and physicality, even if people think I'm very strong, I'm still not as strong as a guy who's strong, and it's interesting to play with the contrast. So I wanted to speak of duets also. I see lots of duets in dance, in contemporary dance or ballet, and I have a different approach of the how I want to show in dance the woman-man relationship, and it was an opportunity to do that by dancing with Fred. And I chose him because I really like his fluid qualities and his cool, calm personality.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of just the way your physicality is, you're obviously a very strong performer, but there's also a lot of feminine aspect to the complexity that you're presenting. So how do you find... How do you navigate that space? Because it's actually a very unconventional space, and it doesn't happen very often in dancers.
You speak about a feminine side of me while I'm dancing?
It's just That's a very mysterious question. Now, well, a lot of the traditional female dancers tend to be very tiny and not very strong, but mm-hmm. you do embody that strength. So throughout your career, how did you navigate and define this unique space that was all yours with mm-hmm. that?
I think, I don't know how to speak about this, but I think women dancers mostly are very strong also. Physically, to be a dancer, you have to be strong enough. Maybe I can be stronger than certain women, but maybe not as strong as others. So it's not a thing that I'm the strongest dancer.
Well, powerful, maybe, dancer. Is a good word. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but I think it's more how I perceive. I see a lot of cliché, even in the contemporary dance, how women, even if a woman dance, but I don't get me wrong, I love how women dance, but sometimes in the relation man-woman, and even if they want to show strength, it becomes often a battle between men and women, and I don't see the relations between men and women as being only battles. Maybe it can be so, but sometimes I see too much of that. When we want to portray a strong woman, she's as an opponent to a man, and sometimes she's just the opposite. She's just too feminine, even if it doesn't mean she's not strong, because you've got to be strong to dance. But we have tendency, or I see a lot, portraying the woman as in a romantic way, where she's lighter and she's being. I don't know. It's really hard to explain all this because it depends on so many dance shows. It's so different. But maybe I was a little bit apart. It's different. It's hard to explain. I mean, how I was different, or maybe I'm not so different. I really don't know. I just try to be true to myself in how I relate with men, not only in a man-woman sexual relationship, you know, appearance on stage, because dance is often, when we have dance duet between men and women, it often goes in this direction. And for me, it was wider than that. There were more possibilities of connections with the men. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's always interesting for me to develop choreographic movements with the male partners.
How do you work with the composer? How do you work with the music? How do the interaction of your body and the music?
I rarely work with composers from the beginning of a piece. Depending on the work with La La Light, was always the music came at the end, and all the dance was made without specific music. Sometimes we could try rehearsal on some music, but just for the fun of a day, but the dance was made as an art form itself, and then the music would arrive, and then we would adapt things to music. And that's a bit how I did with this show, So Blue. I work with lots of different music that helped me create lots of movements, and then when I chose the music, it was maybe 2 months before the show itself, and at some point the music really got me more interested, and then I choreographed on the music. Yes, this time I did choreograph on the music, the piece, but that's really rare. Mostly the choreography was made, and then the music arrived, and then we just adapt a few things. Strangely enough, you can make a whole dance piece on one music and switch the music, and the dance can fit also. Maybe some would be better than others, but I once did with La 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 a duet on a rock guitar, and last minute we decided to dance it on a Saskatchewan music, a team of Spartacus, and the whole choreography worked perfectly on completely different music. But once I choose a music, then I really like to play with it, you know, like not to be exactly having every dance move on every music note. I like to move with it a little bit, like if I was another instrument and being free. But even if it's a small marge, I don't know, a small space that I have, I cannot go completely different on the music, but I like to have this little liberty.
And in terms of the way the work was created, did you have an outside person?
Yes, yeah, it was very important. It's a woman I've worked with a long time with La La La. She's named France Bruyère. She has worked in Toronto for many years, but she's from originally from the group Nouvelle Air in Montreal. Then she danced for a couple of years, and then she became the rehearsal person for Edward and La La La. And when she left La La La, she joined me, and since 10 years, we're working again together. So it's very important for me to have this outside eye. Either I'm working solo or duet. I can also work with the camera, but it's nice to have the feedback of someone who knows me also, who's seen everything I've done. So she can really tell me when I'm on a really new track.
Mm-hmm. And how do you relate? What is, because there are so many different ways to relate to this outside person. They can only feedback what they see, or they can have, or they can ask questions, or they can be even more, add even more content and direction to their work. So on that scale, where would you say she is for you? Is she just, does she migrate from between all these?
Mm-hmm. She's a, I don't know how to say, it's so natural, the relation, that it's hard to define. There's not so many words, but usually when I like something a lot, she will like it too. And when I'm not sure, she's not sure. So rarely we will disagree. So that's why I trust her a lot, because sometimes I'm sure of something and she will say yes. So, you know, because I could work with somebody that has a very, that's very interesting also, but has a completely different taste as mine. And I think we have a similar taste for movement. So, there's not so much that has to be said, but it's important. Or maybe it's important she's there because I'm fast. I'm really fast, and I go into something and I can abandon it very fast and go to something else because my dancing thoughts go fast in one direction and in the other, and she can say, don't forget, you did that part that was very interesting, and I'm moving a lot somewhere else, which is interesting too, but I can sometimes forget.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a good reminder for me. Yeah, she has a very good memory, and since she's working with me for so long, so sometimes I can use her. If I'm not sure of something, I'll ask her to do it, just even mark it, and I can see on her body what it will look almost on mine, you know, and I can decide, oh, I like this better than that, okay. So it's a very, very simple, natural, good relationship for creation with her.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
We're just talking to Louisa.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, of course. Louisa Cavalier here, talking about the show So Blue. We're on Evidence CIUT FM. The show is happening May 29th and 23rd, 29th and 30th as part of the Luminato Festival.
And just go to sonycenter.ca for all the more information on the piece and to buy tickets and everything else.
Great. Well, thank you again.
Okay, thank you. 1, 2, 1, 2. You understand?
Welcome back to Evidence on CIUT 89.5 FM this Saturday, May 23rd. At least I think it is.
It is.
Yes. And I'm Ted Fox.
And I'm Małgorzata Nowacka.
And now we have Nova Bhattacharya on the line now. And she is both a choreographer and actor in the Bollywood-inspired adaption of Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, which currently runs to May 31st at the Tarragon Theatre Main Space. Welcome, Nova.
Hi there.
Hi. So, how did this project come about between you and Richard Rose?
Well, Richard has directed Much Ado About Nothing in different contexts at different theaters, and he was doing it at the Rose Theater in Brampton, and at the same time, his daughters were going through a Bollywood phase, and he was sitting at home watching Bollywood movies and went, wait a minute, Shakespeare and Bollywood would work really well together. So that was what planted the idea in his head, and he knew that he wanted to have a dance element in it. And Richard actually comes from quite an extensive dance background. Once upon a time at York University, he used to do lighting design for Menaka Takkar, and he also worked for dance companies. So he knew he wanted to have a strong dance element in this show, and he gave me a call.
Turning the setting into Brampton, I found fascinating. I didn't know Brampton had a large Hindi community. Is that correct?
It does. It does. And, there was, I think, Tarragon staff went on a couple of field trips to Brampton.
Like bird-watching field trips.
I missed out on that one.
I said, like bird-watchers going on a field trip to binoculars. Yeah. For those who aren't familiar with the plot of Shakespeare, can you very briefly mention what the story is about and about how it was adapted into the Hindi community?
Right. Well, it's Much Ado About Nothing, which is one of Shakespeare's more well-known comedies, but in one would say Shakespearean tradition, although it's a comedy, there's also a very serious humanist element running through it, and at the crux of the story is a marriage and different people's attempts to thwart that marriage from going forward, and what happens, and also just like the usual sort of Shakespeare stuff of like, you know, so and so loves so and so, but instead of just telling her, somebody else has to go and pretend to be so and so in order to get her to fall in love with him, and you know, so it's about love and it's about marriage and it's about family, and I think that's really crucial to this adaptation in terms of setting it in the context of the Indian community, and because family values in a contemporary context are still extremely integral to that community and to its culture and to its, you know, day-to-day life. And so taking something that, yes, is from a completely different culture and then transposing it to this one, having that family connection, I think, is what makes it really strong.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically taking, I refer to the word squabbles, and I'll say why I say that, between people from different cultures and how the cultures are affecting their family life and the dysfunction between it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the Brampton South Asian community. One of the leads is the mayor of Brampton.
Yes.
What was it like being an actor? How does dancing, your dancing career, affect you as an actor?
Well, so this was quite the roller coaster ride for me to get onto to make my theatrical debut, you know, in the play by that guy named Shakespeare. And I had a lot of fun, and it was a lot of hard work. And it's a smaller part that I have, but it has some meaty, classic monologue type things where I get to go off at breakneck speed. It was, you know, like I kind of thought, okay, I'll learn my lines and then somebody will tell me what to do. And then it was really interesting having this very lived learning experience, because yes, I learned my lines, and yes, we did blocking and all that kind of stuff, which is vaguely familiar to dance. And but then once we started dress rehearsing and previewing on stage, I suddenly, like, I found myself on stage, and I realized that the relationship an actor has to the audience is very different than any experience I've had in dance, and the kind of relationship we have with an audience in dance. And so the very first day I grabbed the assistant director, I was like, oh my God, I'm like, do I look at them? Do I avoid looking at them? What am I supposed to do? And then we did the first preview, and I realized that I spent the entire time giving all of my lines in profile, because I kept talking to the people in my scene, and then, you know, grabbed Richard and was like, Richard, like, I'm sure I'm supposed to be looking out at the house. I'm not just supposed to be talking to people on stage. And so he gave me, like, you know, this quick lesson on how to keep panning my head as I talk, and it felt completely unnatural and bizarre and things like that. And it's just, it really, you know, it's funny because, of course, the actors, they've been super generous with me, although, you know, I said to them on the very first day of rehearsal, I was like, okay, you guys are going to be nice to me in play rehearsal, and then I'll be nice to you at choreography rehearsal.
So with all this, did you feel uncomfortable when you were an actual choreographer teaching dancers in a dance class? Because there's that scene in it, and of course you're in profile of it in that.
Yeah, no, that was totally fine. And even, you know, working with actors, it's not my first time choreographing for theater, so I knew the challenges involved in getting actors to look like they're dancing and getting them to be able to integrate choreography into the broader context of a play and things like that. So that stuff I was really confident about and knew I could get them through that. So and it was, you know, it was my first Bollywood choreography that I've done, so that was fun to do.
Yes, but how do you choreograph non-Bharatanatyam, oh dear, dancers? And given that a lot of them are not actual dancers, I was amazed that they actually did look like real dancers.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one of the things, having done some work in theater, I've gotten pretty good at figuring out how to make actors look good. And I also, even as a choreographer, because I work so much with, the dancers who come into my studio are who I take my inspiration from, and I'm very much a dancer's choreographer. I always do things that I feel bring out the strengths in the dancers that I have in my work. And so I just apply that same principle to the actors, which is, you know, I kind of look at what I've got and who I'm working with and figure out, okay, we've got like three actors who do have a little bit of dance experience, so let's make sure that they're placed in such a place that other people can look at them and build off of them, or that they're in a place where the audience's eye is primarily being drawn to people who do have a facility for movement. And then just, you know, making things like that finale is, if you break down the finale, it's actually really, really quite simple. It's just a matter of the patterns and the repetition and things like that. But we did a couple of workshops that were not about the choreography, where we just worked the movement, which I knew I was going to put in the choreography. So it kept it simple, and nothing has like a technical dance name at all. You know, there's things called the cheese grater and the screen swipe and stuff like that. And that helps actors. I mean, even dancers, we all, you know, Mal well knows, we assign code words for things that we're doing so that we have a language to refer to it. So with actors, you just sort of take that one step forward and give them a language that they can hook on to, which allows them to stop stressing about the fact that they're dancing and allows them to just act something out.
And how was the dance integrated into the process of the piece? Was it always side by side? Did it drive any of the development of the staging? How did that work?
It was quite integrated, especially because of the fact that not only was I the choreographer, but I was in the show. Like, if I had only been the choreographer, I think the schedule would have worked out differently, and they probably would have gotten off book first, and then I would have come in and done the choreography. But because I was there as an actor from the very beginning, and given how many scenes there are in the play and blah, 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 so from the very beginning, they were able to integrate me into they were able to integrate choreography and the choreography workshops into the schedule right from the start. So, like, the finale choreography was was, in fact, the last thing that happened, but because the opening class was the opening class, I worked on that first. And then there's this Halloween party scene where I would have little breakaways with the couples and their dialogue and working with them, and then also creating the sort of larger bits and things like that. So it was quite, I think the fact that I was in the play allowed the choreography to really be building and happening alongside all the text work and everything else that was happening.
Mm-hmm. Now the costume design, I really loved it, and I thought it so greatly reflected the affluence of the people in the production. And they were imaginative, they were gorgeous, they were stunning. I just, in your costume too. Describe that, and how does it feel with all those bright colors?
Well, it was actually, there was a costume meeting very early on in the process that I was at with my choreographer hat on, and I was joking with Richard and the Tarragon people. I was like, so is the costume budget on this show just about like the entire budget of the rest of your production season? Well, it was fun. It was, you know, they did a lot of homework and where they were going to go with the different costume ideas, and they got some donations and they did some actual building of things. And it was interesting to be a part of that process and to be having that kind of clothes specifically built for you to be in a show. And Michelle Tracy did a really good job, and there was a lot of input from the actors as well, of course, in terms of, well, yes, but if these people are rich, they would never wear this, and they would, you know, that kind of thing. So it was, especially for that cast, like, because so many of us do wear those kinds of clothes on an ongoing basis, it was just, you know, a little bit extra fun to be able to be doing that as part of our job.
Ed Hanley and Subha Sankaran, is that it?
Sankaran, yes.
They composed the music?
Yes.
And can you describe their music?
Well, I mean, so Ed was the lead composer, and Subha came in and was working on the melodies and the finale song and things like that. And there was a lot of collaboration going on, too, because the lyrics for the finale song were written by Sharada Eswar based on, you know, the words from the play. And two of the songs that Subha also did the melodic arrangements for are songs that would normally be in Shakespeare productions, like Hey Nani Nani, and then that was adapted and translated into Hindi, working with Sharada Eswar and things like that. And then, of course, Ed was doing a lot of just basic sort of sound design for the play, whether it's cell phone rings going off or the sirens and the helicopter noises and all that kind of stuff. So it was fun for me to be working with Ed in this context, because usually it's whenever I'm working with Ed, it's he and I working on a dance piece, whereas here, you know, there was a director involved and there were all sorts of other things involved. So it was great. And yeah, and the music is very Indian influenced, but also contemporary, and the soundscape, I think, as well, contextualizes the play in terms of it taking place here in North America.
I must say, it was weird hearing Frank Sinatra sing "Strangers in the Night" right after a Hindi segment. I thought that was hilarious, as did the audience. There's one thing I forgot to mention in the dance commode. Alora Patniak is in it.
Yes, she is.
She used to be, or is she still, a director of an Odissi dance company?
She still is.
She still is. And her role is basically a change, isn't it? It was originally a male character, and now
yes,
she's the aunt mm-hmm. of the family. Can you describe that matriarch a bit? It's very important in the last half. And was it that dominant in the play, too? And it's also very funny.
Well, I mean, again, like that idea of taking Leonardo's character and turning it into Auntie, who Alora plays, is also sort of a really key point in this transposition of a Shakespearean play into an Indian community, because having a strong matriarchal figure is very significant in our culture. And it was really interesting. We did We did. One of our student matinees had probably the biggest South Asian contingent of any of the audiences we've had. And even if none of those kids were actually reading the Hindi subtitles, they were recognizing a lot of the Hindi language and a lot of the cultural references. And they totally responded to that role that Alora was playing. Like they were, we were calling them Auntie's crowd. And so yeah, I would say like that was a really important choice that Richard made to do that, and it's so brilliant that Alora got to play it. I mean talk about somebody who actually acts and dances for a living. She's completely bilingual with both disciplines and has so much maturity and experience as an actor. And I was actually saying to her last night in the dressing room, I was like, you know, Alora, I know there's all these other people on stage, but when I do the finale, I just pretend I'm dancing with you. Because it's pretty amazing that Alora Patnaik and I are both dancing on stage together. Because
yeah.
We basically grew up in Canada doing, you know, Bharatanatyam and Odissi at a time when those art forms hadn't become as established as they are today. So for us to now be in this play and be doing like a little, you know, Bollywood ditty is pretty funny.
Yeah. There's one thing I do want to mention. There's two constables in it. Please describe that, because it's straight out of a silent movie. The audience was in stitches. Over
absolutely. In fact, we kind of call it the cop show. Every so often we're like, oh, it's Much Ado About Two Cops. Anand Rajaram and John Cleland are just absolutely brilliant. They're the physical comedy and also the intelligence that they bring to these two constables that they play. And I guess in the original Shakespearean play, it's the night guard, so there were actually six of them. So six people have been, you know, smooshed down into these two characters, and they just did some, you know, brilliant, brilliant work in not only in bringing those characters alive, but also in this whole sort of transposition of things, and the fact that Anand has the Newfie accent and John Cleland is kind of the Indiophile, and it's just it's great. And many times as the actors, you know, because yeah, we saw things in rehearsal, but now that the show is up and running and we're all, you know, getting our own sense of what we're doing, most of us don't get to see the cop show. And we're always like, okay, we're going to have to do this so that we actually all get to see what they're doing, because we just hear it on the sound monitors.
Yeah. So like there's this Keystone Cops thing. Oh, and we should mention that one of the constables is called Dancing, like S-I-N-G-H. Every time he said that, or that word was named, the couple beside me were hacked. One was so loud, I thought anybody in the production could hear it. She just found that so funny for some reason. She couldn't stop laughing. It was sort of hilarious, but annoying a bit, too. Okay, so this is currently on.
It is.
At the Terrebonne Theatre's main space. It runs to May 31st.
Yeah, 8 shows a week. We're not in contemporary dance land anymore.
Yes. And Tuesday, and it's nice because you can, before we do come on the show, for instance, we can see it. Tuesday to Saturday, 8 p.m. Is it the next last show, a matinee on Sunday?
Yeah, last show is a matinee on Sunday. Saturday is a two-show day. The matinees are at 2:30.
Okay. And you can go to tarragontheatre.com to get all the information and order tickets.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy it. I thought it was hysterical.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Couldn't stop. Entertaining and seeing you guys doing acting, you and Alora, was just great. So refreshing. So thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ted. Thanks, Mal.
Thank you.
Okay, and that's it for today on CIUT's Evy Dance. I'd like to thank Jessica Runge. Her show runs May 28th to June the 7th at Artscape Young Place at 180 Shaw Street. And go to dancecurrent.com/event, and you'll find a nice little article on that. Also, Louise LeCavalier and her presentation of So Blue takes place May 20th. It opens May 20th, 8 p.m. at Blue Apples Theater, which is at the St. Lawrence Center for the Arts. Next week, so far the guest we have on will be Janet Johnson, and she'll be here to talk about the Guelph Dance Festival, which is also on, I think, at the same time as the Ottawa Dance Festival, which is also on with everything else. Boy, we're really, and
yeah,
we're gathered coming
we're
up.
Going
we're
to
having
do.
A great dance summer.
Absolutely.
Augurs for us. I'd like to thank Ariel and Chauvantec.
Thank you.
I think that made it make better. I don't know. And